Welcome back to Silver Screen Social, listeners. I'm your host, Jackson Vickery, and on this episode, I spoke to costume designer April Napier about her work on Todd Haynes' May December, starring Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore. Please enjoy a clip of May December before the interview begins. And also, for all movie lovers, win a gift card to your favorite local cinema. Subscribe to Silver Screen Social on iTunes or Spotify, leave us a rating/review, and DM us a screenshot on Instagram at Jackson Vickery or at Silver Screen Social Pod for your chance to win.
My brother Mark, he still lives in Richmond. He always says, keep your expectations low and you'll never be disappointed. And I always forget that.
How many brothers do you have?
Four. Two older, two younger. But I think you know that.
So, what were your expectations?
That tonight would go well, that my children would love me, and my life would be perfect.
I'm a little naive.
I am naive. I always have been. In a way, it's been a gift.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. How about you?
Well, it's kind of an exciting morning for May December.
I was just about to say, and showing up.
Dude, Kelly is smashing it.
I mean, know.
That's like the fucking secret thrill of all of this is like three people have sent me like New York Times, Vanity Fair, and The New Yorker or something. And like showing up the little engine that could.
The little engine that could. I absolutely adored that film. Just as much as I adored May December. I mean, I just have to start out by saying to you, I mean, some of the films that you've been a part of have been true, like, touchstones in my life. And this is just, like, the biggest thrill. When I got the email about interviewing you, I was like, yes.
I feel so fortunate. I feel so lucky on the world, the small and beautiful familial world of people I got to be engaged with or involved with or supporting, you know.
Yeah.
It's also so awesome, the connection of Kelly and Todd, right?
Yeah. I mean, just talk to me first just about, I mean, the year that is 2023. Obviously, I mean, these things are made at totally different time points and they don't mesh, but I mean, now that they're out in the world in the same year. And I mean, what do you make of this sort of like convergence of worlds between the two?
I mean, it's incredible, right? Because you know that both Todd and Kelly are masters, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then Kelly is so kind of awards shy or so self-contained that she doesn't push for that stuff and didn't have a big push from any way, right? It wasn't, Netflix is behind May December, right? So it's like, you can imagine, and it's Julian, it's Natalie, and et cetera, it's Todd, you know? But the idea that both of these films in such a different way are both being recognized in this moment is so extraordinary. Because there's a similarity to them, right? And they're quiet. Like, I realize, like, the kind of film that I really love making is a quiet Bresson, Dardenne brothers, intimate storytelling as far back as Lady Bird or something, you know? Like, I like a human story that can touch people, a universal thing that everyone can relate to or can pick something out of. Or a more transgressive one, even like May December, which is so layered and so complex. But to be... I mean, it's such an awful word, but like blessed or fortunate enough to be like under the umbrella of Todd and Kelly, who are such masters, so articulate, so brilliant, so such auteurs. They're so intelligent and such cinephiles that to be able to support them and express stories with them is, man, it's incredible. That's and also, incredible. Like you said, you know, we shot Showing Up so long ago.
Yeah.
And they wait on the release because they want to get past, like, last year, all the hubbub with an awards thing. Like, they, it's not Kelly's jam, right? So you wait to release it until after all that stuff kind of settles down. And then it happens to coincide with this moment when, because May, December was so quickly, we were shooting a year ago. Like, yeah. We were in Atlanta a year ago shooting. It's the turnaround on that was so quick.
Mm. And just very quickly before diving into May, December, you mentioned one of the projects that has captured my heart and also sort of has another sort of convergence in the world, Lady Bird, but also Certain Women, another movie that absolutely ripped me to shreds with Miss Lily Gladstone back, oh gosh, maybe 2015, 2016, around.
Yeah, it was 2015. Exactly. Yeah. And First Cow. Lily was also in First Cow.
And First Cow.
Cow is also one of those intimate stories that is, yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. Maybe we lump all three of those. I mean, it's hard to lump all three of those together. But I mean, what do you take away just from those particular stories? I mean, Lady Bird is sort of, I mean, just that sort of like, that internal scream that I feel like I was having as a teenager, as a high schooler, as a person who was coming of age. And then also the same thing with Certain Women in a very different way in terms of the queerness around the Lily's character and just everything within that. There's just this sort of like very subtle suppressed rage. And I'm just curious, I feel like with a lot of the films you work on there, you see that with showing up too with Michelle's character, and you see that with Gracie's character, you just see this like slightly pent up rage. So I'm just curious, there's obviously a through line through all of these, and I'm curious if you could just dive into maybe like the fascination with the story-based projects that you pick and what you hope to accomplish with the costumes of these films and the stories of these films that you're trying to tell.
I mean, I think everything that you touched on is really an element of the human condition, right? So the idea that I can be a part of doing the research and doing the background work and doing the investigation of different aspects or similar aspects of the human condition is the most valuable thing to me. I'm not really interested in a big, massive film, right? I'm interested in smaller stories, in the way of like a Robert Bresson character, right? They're small, intimate stories, but there is a universal thread that everyone can relate to. And you can do things very quietly. A gesture can be quiet. The way you say a word can be quiet. And I feel like the costumes have to be quiet too. Like, I don't really like to do costumes. I feel like my job is to be as thorough and as precise as possible, but also to be as authentic and supportive. And I feel like Chris Blauvelt, the cinematographer for Kelly and also did May, December, we have a similar sensibility in the way, like, he leaves the camera stationary, right? You don't do a lot of fancy work. You let things float in, you let things float out. And so there's like a precision about the way that you plan things that is on a, like a subtle, almost unconscious level. And then you allow the audience to come in, right? I mean, that's a Bressonian idea too, is that you're not like leading the audience. You're not forcing them. You're not telling them what to do. You're letting them come to it and participate in it. You're letting the audience be a member of what is happening, right? Mm-hmm. May, December, you get to sit back. I've seen May, December now four times. and I read the script and I did the research and I was there shooting. And every time that I see it, there's still something, a different thing revealed, a different subtle, like, it's shocking to me how through the direction, through the way it's shot, through the gestures and the delivery of the lines, and obviously the writing, there's so many complex layers to it. And you don't get hit over the head with it immediately. It's all not delivered to you and shown to you. You get to be a part, as an audience member, you get to be a participant in discovering or unveiling things. And the same thing for certain women, and the same thing even in Lady Bird, right? It's a subtle gesture. And I think it's respectful to the audience to let them participate, to be engaged in it.
Yeah. There's a certain amount of trust that the director has to have in their audience, in a sense, to let them have those moments, to have those sort of stationary moments in terms of the shot, and to let them have that moment with the film, which I think is very sort of is really beautiful, because you're getting the story, but you're not being like jam fed with something, you're experiencing it, which is yeah. So beautiful.
And there's like, and because they're quiet like that, you have to have patience, and I feel like there isn't a lot of patience in contemporary society, because everything is exponentially moving so fast. And so to honor the idea, to honor the patience, and to honor the intelligence of the audience, to let them, to invite them in, and to let them, let it wash over them, and let them maybe go back and look at it again and notice another little bit of information. Yeah.
And so I'm curious, as a follow-up to the last thing you said, what was something that was revealed to you in your latest screening of May, December that you hadn't discovered?
And I didn't, the one scene that I was really like, fuck, was when Charles and Natalie are walking on the beach, and the way he opens up and divulges himself, because it's tricky with May, December, right? You think you're with Gracie. Oh no, wait, you think you're with Elizabeth. Oh wait, then there's Charles. Like, who is this a portrait of? And who is, there isn't one person that you attach yourself to that's like, that's the person I'm following to tell the story. And they're going to be like the leader to divulge to me what's happening, because everyone has their own complex and layered experience of what's happening. And then it's slowly, who's the protagonist? Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Who's the victim? Who's the manipulator? Yeah, it starts as a single portrait of Natalie, then it's like a double portrait persona of Natalie and Elizabeth, and then it becomes like a triple portrait, right, with Charles also then coming in, and then it's his story. But it was that scene of them walking, and the way that Charles is always looking over and telling Natalie, I wanted it. Like, I missed those lines. I also missed, like, I think in the third screening or something, I was like, when she's putting the makeup, when Gracie's putting the makeup on Natalie, what was your mom like? She was beautiful. And like, behind that, like, what is all of that saying? Like, what's all that backstory saying of like, what's not being said? I have to think about what's not being said. I have the opportunity to think about what's not being said. And that's also like, when you read the script, you're following the story, but then it's about the way that it's directed, the way that it's filmed, and the way that it's performed. Gets to be revealed in another way. Like those mirror scenes and all the ones where it's the direct address and the camera is the mirror. Like, when you read the script, I mean, I will say, from the very beginning, from our very first meeting, which was 4th of July last year, actually, with Todd, he said, the camera will be the mirror, right? Because it's about identity. It's about us understanding ourselves, or our inability to understand ourselves. So the camera will always be functioning in several scenes, will be functioning as the mirror, because there's a lot of mirrors in it, the reflective quality of looking at ourselves, looking at others. Because so when you read a scene like they're in the bathroom, Gracie's putting the makeup on Natalie, and you kind of imagine it in your mind being like, oh, the camera's here, we're looking over their shoulders, the mirror is there, they're doing their thing, you're over Natalie's shoulder or something. But then when you turn, when you are like, no, when Todd's like, no, it's all happening. The camera is the mirror, and it's just the two of them facing us. Like that's a whole other complexity of like looking inward.
Oh gosh, this is going to be tonight's rewatch of May, December is going to be very.
The other one that will fuck you up, the other scene that will fuck you up is when she's trying on the graduation dresses.
Mm.
Check this out. You're looking at Natalie and Julie on the couch. In between them, look, there's a mirror on the desk behind them. And the camera's actually mounted behind that mirror. So what you're seeing is what the camera's seeing is the three-way mirror that's reflecting what the girl's trying on. So you're seeing the reflection of the reflection. And that's why you have like those broken up, like there's two Julies, and you see the cracks, like the vertical cracks between people, and you see the close-up on. So like when we were shooting it, I got there that morning, they're like, we're going to do it in a oneer. And I was like, she has to try on three dresses. Like, how is she going to go in there and do all that in one take? So myself and an assistant costumer had to go in and be in the dressing room and change her, and then like tap her on the shoulder and be like, go Lizzie. And in between those lines, we actually did it all in a oneer. There's a final cut in the third change where they do more of a side angle on her. But even when we were shooting it, it was like Julie and Natalie couldn't look at each other. Cause if they're looking at each other, it would look weird because you're actually looking at the reflection of them because the mirror is picking up the other mirror. So Todd would be like, oh, Natalie, you have to look here. That's when it looks like you're looking in Julie's eyes, and Julie, you have to look here. And they were like, that is crazy. We can't look at each other during the scene because the way that the reflection is showing it would have been off. I love that scene so much. I really love that scene.
That's like a house of mirrors almost. And just terms of like, oh God, that's trippy. That's really trippy. Mm. Oh my gosh, this is going to be.
And someone pointed out to me the other day, because you see the reflection of that. You see the reflection of them putting on their makeup in the bathroom. And then the final scene where they're in the bathroom of the restaurant, that camera's there. And then, but there's one scene, the only scene where you see after Charles has come home, Joe has come home after having sex with Elizabeth, and he takes a shower, and that's the only direct address on him. So that's when, like, also he's looking at himself. It's the only time that he's the one looking in the mirror. It's fucking, Todd is a genius. Todd is an auteur. He's also a cinephile. He knows everything about the history of filmmaking and the writing films, directing films.
What a dream. Oh my God.
Such and a dream.
I'm curious, what did you learn about humans on this film in particular?
I mean,
condition.
Yeah. It's easy. Things are more complex than we think, and you think you have an idea about something. And that's a very static place to be, right? Because things are layered. Nothing is black or white. Things are layered. Things are complex. And where you think you can trust something or understand something can move around a lot.
Mm.
And your sense of, that includes your sense of yourself, right? You have an idea of what your impression is of yourself or how you're carrying yourself or what your beliefs are. And that's malleable as well.
Mm.
Is it true? It's obviously subjective. All that can change. It does change.
Yeah, there's this hypersensitivity in a sense that if this film was made at any other time, it wouldn't hit that button in a sense. I mean, it would, But I think since we all are so hypersensitive with our vanity and with the way we're perceived, it's just, I don't know, maybe that's the secret. I don't know, but there's a lot of secret sauces that are going in here that make it the magic that it is. But I like that hypersensitivity that, and what's also so interesting is, I mean, there's really no use of phones in this film at all that I can think of.
It's true. It's true. You know, there's something about, we talked about, and I tend to like when Todd asked me to do it, he did say, I wanted you to do it. And I asked Kelly if it would be okay if I bought you, because he said, I really appreciated what you did in certain women, because certain women is, there's a timelessness to it, right? You don't want to get locked into any specific moment. Because what the issues that you're dealing with are universal, and they've been going on forever. It's the same thing. There was a, so he said, I really love that. So there's an idiosyncraticness to each character. It can be timeless. You don't really want to place it in any moment, because you want it to be able to be tapped into in any moment. And yet these characters aren't, you don't go to the mall and buy their clothes, right? Like, we had to like kind of dig deep to get some new things, some vintage things, some worn things. Like, there's a delicacy, a very subtle nuance to how you show a character. And that has, in my view, has to be very quiet, but very specific. Same thing in women.
Yeah, and, no, the right on the nail there. But with the Joe character, I'm curious. I mean, there's obviously so much to unpack with him, but I'm curious, what were those little nuggets of life, those Easter eggs that you were able to just pick up on? I think of his polo shirts a lot. I think it's like like a striped polo shirt, and maybe my brain is like totally going.
No, up. There's a striped rugby shirt when he's on that very intimate scene on the roof with his son smoking weed, and he has that breakdown. Like, I don't know if we're having a connection or if I'm giving you a bad memory. With Joe, it was mostly when Todd said, I've cast Charles Melton. It's surprising to me because he's so handsome and so Adonis like I didn't picture him like that in my mind, but he had such a brilliant read and he had such a brilliant rehearsal with Julie that it was like, that's the person. Because Julie was really rooted in like a performative femininity with her character, like this princess like character, princess quality, that this more stronger masculine man comes in to like save her, sort of. But now it's been 20 years. He's gotten a little rounder. He's gotten a little dumpier. He put on 35 pounds for this film, so he wouldn't be so perfect. And there's also a uniform in the South, which is, I knew. And then when I got there, I was like, Jesus, this is really a uniform. Like, everyone has a blue Oxford. Every man has a blue Oxford, a blue polo, pleated khaki shorts and pleated khaki trousers. And it's, they wear boat shoes. They wear those bad, like keen gardening shoes. Like, it's a uniform for men. And I just thought, Joe is trying to like be a dad, right? He never got to be a teenager. He was like a stunted adolescence. So he's trying to wear this outfit that makes him fit in. He's Korean and he's trying to be a dad. So he's just trying to fit in. He always wears a t-shirt underneath. And we talked about that because it was hot and summery. And Todd was like, should he have that? And we talked about it being like his armor is like, he always has a t-shirt underneath. Because it's kind of like his protection. And then that one scene when he really breaks down on the ceiling on the roof with his son, we got a old Abercrombie and Fitch polo and those really washed out jeans. And then we just washed and dyed the fuck out of that rugby shirt. Cause like, that's the place where he's like crumbling back into his adolescence, right? We're seeing his sensitivity. We're seeing his, like, he probably had that for a long time ever since he was younger. And that's the one thing there he finds comfort in there. And that's such a revealing scene.
I love that. Oh, that's trippy and so cool. And then I'd love to also just talk about the graduation scene too, because I think that is so, I mean, it's just a masterclass in just the entire filmmaking spectrum. And I'm just curious, what was that conversation like when it came to the story?
That was actually in Sammy's script. They approach each other on the field, their final interaction, and they come to meet like two white knights on the field. So that was in the script, that they would both be in white, and it's like their final duel. And Natalie, of course, has to be in her more structured, more urban, kind of like more precise, clean lines with her Saint Laurent glasses. And then Julie comes in still with her femininity and her flowing softness. And then she's wearing Celine glasses, but they're like more of a 70s. Like there's a softness to her, but they come together to meet in their final duel. And then when she says, insecure people are so dangerous. Remember, I'm secure, put that in. And then you see Natalie's whole thing, like her insecurity as like, as an actress, it's just like all breaking up, and then the camera pulls away, right? You just see her whole thing falling apart, right? Like all of this research that she's been doing.
It's like that.
It was such a fun thing to work on, because you have to see the gradual change in Natalie. And we had such a short period of prep time. We saw Julie on a Friday, did her 13 changes or 15 changes. And so we had kind of a map of like what she was going to wear. And we knew that she would be a la kind of Tina Barney, theater of manners, three women. Altman's Three Women was kind of a touchstone. So we knew that she would be like in pastels, lavenders, pink, really her performative femininity. And then Natalie would come in more monochromatic and more like the person from the city, because she lives in an urban environment. So we fit Julie and all of her changes. And then we had kind of a map. So then we could go, oh, black, gray, navy, white, ivory, cream, gray, pink, lavender. Like we could see, we could track like when she changes and when they show up together and she's getting softer. And that also was obviously also in hair and makeup as well.
That's just I love this conversation.
Doing costumes is really, I'm really into it.
Yeah. I'm also curious, just in our final few minutes, in all of the very diverse characters that you've been able to help tell the story of over your career, I'm wondering if there's one or two that you have just instantly like connected with, on a personal level.
Me personally, Lady Bird, you know, because I feel like Lady Bird is, I have that story too, you know, like everyone has that story of being, I'm sure they had that during the Bauhaus period. I'm sure the Romans and the Greeks and since all time, to be growing up is fucking hard, you know, and it can come from, like, I had references in there that I did have Bauhaus women references for Lady Bird. I had the slits. I had stuff from the 70s, the 80s, like any period was kind of open. She was such a blank canvas and she could take things like a magpie. It was a sense of self-discovery, right? And I think that thing I liked about Lady Bird so much is that she made so many mistakes. Like in that, it's a fortunate thing to be around before this thing that's telling you what to do and showing you what's cool. Like there's a real beauty in making mistakes and going down one path and then realizing, oh, no, that's not, trying things out and making mistakes and figuring out who you are, or trying to figure out who you are. It's a long process, right? Like we're even discovering in May, December, you think you have a sense of yourself, but making mistakes when you're discovering yourself is, I think, a very important thing to do.
And then final question for you, what story haven't you told yet that you'd like to?
Ah. Interesting. You know what? I'm not really sure. But I do think something about animals. Like Kelly really loves animals.
Yeah.
And she has a lot of animals in her films. And I feel like there's some kind of way that animals are like an unsung, the unsung heroes. Like my favorite film of last year, for instance, was EO. Did you ever see EO?
I didn't know. It was on my list, and I'll put that. I'm writing it on my notes right now.
Watch it when you're feeling strong, because it's really a tough film. It's a remake of Bresson's Ohasard Baltazar, and it's about donkey being like carrying the burden of the world, and also being like the most sacred animal. Took Jesus to the manger, like, and he and Io is just, or Baltazar are just observing the folly of human nature. And that's such a brilliant idea, right? From all classes, like the rich, the poor, the middle class, the soccer hooligans, like everybody, and the donkey's just like, those big, beautiful eyes just witnessing everything about human folly. I mean, human folly is such a great, the human condition is such a rich exploration. It's universal, it's personal.
Yeah, I love that. Ooh, that would be so cool. And now it's top of my notes right here, EO, that but I will.
Be strong when you're watching it, because it's a weeper.
Ooh, okay.
Weeper.
Well, I'll take that to note. But April.
Maybe watch it with a friend.
Yes, I'll do that. But April, I want to thank you so much for chatting with me this morning. This has just been such a joy.
Thank you for your great questions and observations.